From Studio 22, you're listening to ServeCast with your host, William Lamb. ServeCast is dedicated to challenging those who have a desire to serve, lead, and make the world a better place through the love of Jesus Christ. And now, here's William.
Hey, welcome to ServeCast. I'm glad you're with us today. My guest is Carlton Byrd. That's actually Pastor and Dr. Carlton Byrd with over 20 years of experience in pastoral ministry and community engagement. Most recently, he was in Atlanta, Georgia, and currently he is the pastor of University Church in Huntsville, Alabama. He and his wife have three children. I'm delighted he's here. So focus, tune in, get ready. It's going to be a fantastic 45 minutes. We'll be right back. Carlton, welcome to ServeCast. We are glad you're with us, man. What a day in chapel at Lee University.
Glad to be here once again at Lee. A great school, great energy, the music, the worship. It inspires me, and so I'm grateful to be here. Thank you.
Now, you're a two-timer, and we don't think this is going to be the last time you're going to join us. Hopefully, you'll be with us in the future. But today, we just want to talk about what's happening at Huntsville for a few minutes. You guys are getting ready to dedicate, or by the time folks listen to this podcast, you will have already dedicated a building and community engagement. Share a little bit about what's going on down there.
Well, yes, we're excited. This coming weekend, we will cut the ribbon to our new 22,000 square foot facility, Family Life Center. We don't want to see this facility, if you will, just as something that is limited or exclusive to the church. But we see this facility as one that will engage in ministry and engage the community in ministry. Specifically our neighborhood, our community, residents, young and old. A lot of things will transpire in the facility. We have a gymnasium in the facility, and we plan to have basketball leagues, yeah. All ages, male, female, volleyball leagues, classes for the community, family life classes, marriage, divorce care, grief share. With that, we will also have a vegetarian food market in the facility, and also a barbershop. So there are a lot of things we're going to be doing, exercise classes. We have a walking track, Zumba, and everything else. But we see this as a facility where we can engage the community. We also will have weekly, as we do now, we'll expand on this, free food distribution and free clothing distribution as well. So it'll be well-rounded.
Now, this isn't new to you because you did something similar to this in Atlanta, Georgia, when you were there as pastor. It's interesting, you know, you're taking an approach from, you know, community-based ministry to have a barbershop, youth center. I mean, it sounds like a holistic approach to the gospel. Is that what you guys are doing down there?
That's correct. Jesus met people's needs. Then he bade them follow me. And so people don't care how much you know unless they know how much you care. And so with that in mind, we want to make sure that people know that we care about them. Very interesting at Oakwood University, where I am the pastor. It's very similar to here at Lee, sure. You know, Lee University, where we have a campus. And a lot of times there is a myth that what transpires on the campus is only for the campus family. And so we feel as a church, it is very important for us to demyth the myth that what we do just is for the campus family, but it's for the broader human family, if you will. So everyone, red, yellow, black, and white, young, old, everybody, come take part, be a part. Bottom line is we're not here to do exclusive ministry. Mm-hmm. I think too often, many of our ministries are insular in nature. Mm-hmm. We preach to ourselves, we teach to ourselves, we minister to ourselves. And so with that insulated ministry, it becomes isolated, if you will. And so it kind of becomes insular, then isolated, and then I can say this, it's almost incestual. Mm. And we all know the fruit of incest is something that's retarded. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times we have retarded churches because we think more about ourselves than we do about the greater community that God has called us to minister to. There in Matthew 28:19-20, go ye therefore. Yeah. That's the gospel commission. And so it's not just what we do in our corporate worship mm-hmm. experience, myself with preaching or with the choir singing or whatnot, but it's also what we do mm-hmm. during the week to help our fellow man.
Man, that's a good illustration for us today. And in chapel, you actually talked about this concept of loving your neighbor, and what does it mean to actually love your neighbor? Now, we don't want to kind of re-preach that on this podcast because you know, we're going to link this chapel talk to our podcast today. And so folks can actually go watch that video in its entirety. But I need to start this first few minutes off talking about faith. How did you get started in this whole idea of, you know, you're a television host, pastor, you're, you know, a well sought after speaker, very effective in ministry. But what was really your launch and your call? Where did God really say, Carlton, I need you working on my side doing this stuff, man. I need you to be investing in this ministry and in the kingdom work, making a difference in people's lives.
My grandfather's a pastor. My father's a pastor, retired now. My father-in-law is a pastor. So I would dare to say pastoral ministry was in my bones, in my DNA. But when I went to Oakwood, early 90s, as an undergraduate student, I double majored, theology and business management. And I went to several internships during the summer that were business related, several companies that I worked for. And I enjoyed it, but it was not me. And I knew at that point, ministry, having sat under it, you know, my parents, having lived it, I knew it was for me. And so therefore, at Oakwood, during my undergraduate years, like I said, when I went away during the summers, enjoyed it, but it wasn't me. Mm-hmm. But when I got back into that ministry modality, full time, that's really where I knew that was the calling of God on my life. And I really believe he has prepared me for this, and I enjoy what I do.
I love the title of your message and your tagline today, get off of your donkey and love thy neighbor.
Right, right.
You said it very well. I was pretty excited about that. So what does that really mean? What does it mean to love your neighbor in a world of chaos where, you know, everywhere you turn, there seems to be problems and misinterpretations and all of the above? What does it mean for us to love our neighbor?
In the church, we used to sing a song, if I can help somebody I walk along, then my living should not be in vain. Yeah. Ministry is service. Mm. That's what ministry is. You know, without getting too deep theological or getting the Greek or the Hebrew, ministry, what is it? Bottom line, ministry is service. And so with that, when we talk about getting off your donkey and loving your neighbor, we're talking about engaging in service. The greatest sermon ever preached is not the one from the pulpit, but the greatest sermon ever preached is the one that's lived. And we say that all the time, but that is in fact a reality. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's living that. It's not just saying that, but it's living that. And so I want my life to be one in which people can see, yeah, great pulpiteer, great speaker, great orator, but more than that, he engages in service, he engages in people. The primacy of my ministry is people. Mm-hmm. Bottom line, people. Jesus came to save people. And so with that, I think our ministry modalities and our service orientation, our ministry offerings to the community must be paramount, must be at the forefront because they impact people. Jesus came to save people. He has called us to minister and to serve people.
You got pretty direct in your chapel talk, and I have a question that came in from one of our students that heard you talk today. And, you know, people, you know, you love people. It's obvious. I mean, it kind of leaks out of you. If somebody sits around with you, they're going to see that you really do love people. But we also understand that, you know, not everybody loves everybody, and that's some right. people hate others. You probably got somebody who hates you, yeah. you know. So the question I've got for you is, how do you love somebody who hates you, or how do you love somebody who is causing harm to you? You know, the biblical response is to love. Mm-hmm. How do you do that when difficulty, such as someone who is not reciprocating that love, you know, how do you love people who don't love you?
Well, for me, and I want to be very clear, it's very easy as a pastor to answer, well, you just love them. The Bible says love them, bless them. But, you know, that's hard. You know someone doesn't like you, but yet God calls us to love them. That's one of the hardest things to do. For me, I go back to what Christ has done for us. Clearly, his own rejected him, but he still loves. So I think he's the greatest model. So to help me, I have to look and focus in on Christ, you know, read about his life in the New Testament, specifically the Gospels. And through his life, I'm able to see how he was able to love despite being hated upon. So that's a beginning point for me. Then for me, I'm then trying to say, what can I find in common with the person? And instantaneously, they may not love me or may not even like me, but perhaps we can identify a point of common reference. And I try to do that with an individual. What are some things we do like in common? And so with that, I'll try to build a relationship. But I've learned, don't force yourself on people. Hmm. But if I just show love, just love people despite what they think, I think that's been very, very helpful to me. So one, I look at Christ. I look at his modality. Then two, I'll try to identify those things that are common to us and those things that we both love and hold dear. And maybe we can begin a conversation. Maybe we can begin a relationship based on those two things.
Now, let's dig a little deeper in that just for a minute, because we know that the unfortunate reality is racism is real.
It is.
And racism, you know, is a reality. I don't care where you live in the world, there's racism. And you dealt with that a little bit in your chapel talk today. You talked about inter and intra racism. Can you unpack that from a faith perspective?
From faith perspective.
What are you talking about?
When we talk about inter racism, you know, that's probably a bit more common when we talk about white versus black versus white, black and white versus yellow versus red. We're talking about coming outside of one's own race group, if you will, and there is a certain feeling mm-hmm. towards the other race. Mm-hmm. When we talk about intra, there's a lot of racism that is within the races. Mm-hmm. White on white racism, black on black racism. It can be rooted in economics. It can be rooted in skin color. It can be rooted in your social connectivity that you have with people. But we discover in our world today, racism is not just limited to the between race racism, but it's also intra within the race. So when I was talking about that this morning, that's what I was speaking to.
So in this idea of loving people who don't necessarily love you, and this idea that racism is a reality, what do you think is our biblical responsibility to actually deal with it from a scriptural base versus just a practical approach?
It's kind of what I said this morning. Like I said, I don't want to re-preach the sermon.
Yeah,
but
you can. We'll let you.
1 John 4:7-8, beloved, let us love one another, yeah. for love is of God. So you can't say that you love God and you can't love people. Mm. For love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and loveth God. He that loveth not, knoweth not God, because God is love. So if we're saying that we're followers of God, if we're saying that we love God, we can't help but love people. And so for me, that's my biblical support for that. Loving God, loving people.
And I agree with you 100%. And I actually, you know, make that statement in circles that I deal with on a regular basis, you know, that I think you can actually probably, you know, still love and forgive and be hospitable and not necessarily proclaim to be a Christian. But I don't know how you can proclaim to be a Christian and not be forgiving and loving and hospitable.
Correct.
So when people who have not yet met our Redeemer, who don't know him, and they're looking at this whole Christian sphere sometime from awareness that there seems to be a lot of different bubbles. You know, there's this one particular, you know, faith group and that professes Christianity, one particular faith group that professes Christianity and another, and it seems like a lot of bubbles. You know, how can we combat that, and where can unity come in to help us? And you mentioned it a moment ago when you talked about, let's find our similarities. Let's find some things that we are alike in.
Right.
But what does the world need to hear from us, and how can we break down our bubbles or our silos to really start locking arms together across the world as, you know, Christians to make impact for the long term?
Right. And it goes back to what I shared earlier, commonalities. Let's focus on those, and let's make it happen. I also think, you know, we used to sing a song in our youth meetings within my church group. The song went something like this: it only takes a spark to get a fire going.
I remember that one.
Okay, pass it on. And yeah. So I think that the church, we have responsibility. I, as the pastor, I have responsibility to model this. Christ has modeled it for me. I said that earlier. And so with that, I seek to follow him. As a pastor, I need to model it. Then from that, it needs to flow down to my church. They need to model it. And then as the church within that community, we need to model it. Hence the Family Life Center. All right. Let's not just preach love. Let's show love. Mm. So then during the week, be it distribution of clothing, be it distribution of food, be it English as a second language, be it let's play together. Mm. You know, we're not trying to proselytize people per se.
Sure.
Let's just play basketball together. Let's put a couple of teams together. Let's just play together. Mm-hmm. And let's identify some commonalities, some things we enjoy doing that are not those gray areas, but let's just have some fun, if you will. And I think if we do those things, that will help. So when you talked earlier and you asked me about intra and inter-racism, even churches within our own faith groups, we can see this. You know, there may be a little rivalry between churches. Well, let's identify some things we can do together. Maybe it's, let's have, instead of your church, my church, we're having separate picnics. Let's have our fall picnic together. Mm.
We're all on the same team, right?
Let's just do some things together. And I think we have to be intentional about that. You know, we can't just say it, but let's do it. So if it's, let's play basketball together. Let's play softball, soccer together. Let's have a church picnic together. Let's all get together. Your church, my church. We're going to meet together. We're going to go to a Braves or Falcons game. Let's identify those things. And then with that, we can begin to show, hey, this guy really loves me. This guy really cares about me. This guy really, you know, he likes me, she likes me, you know, and whatnot. I think that's important.
And that seems to be what you're talking about in the front end of this thing, that, you know, it's better to, you know, let your life preach than your voice preach. That's and right. If your life is preaching, then your voice is typically going to match up to, right. You know, and people are going to compare your living and your voice and say, I like that. And I want to be part of that.
And I think it's, you know, I look at, you know, the two of us. It only takes 5-10 minutes when you're talking to an individual. Yeah. And you're able to read them. You're able to look at them and you see their countenance as it relates to if this person is authentic. If they're genuine, you know.
Sure.
And I think when people see that, they're willing. But try not to preach too much here. But Micah 6:8, I love this text.
Yeah.
What does God require of us? To do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly before God. So that's what we're called to do. So whether or not one joins my church or not,
sure.
Whether or not one loves me or not, I am still required to do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with God.
And I like how you said it earlier. God loves me, and God tells me to love you.
Right.
And it's really not an option for a believer.
No.
And I think that's very important for us to recognize is that, you know, loving one another as a believer really is not an option. So, hey, Carlton, thank you for these few minutes about faith. We're going to be right back and talk about leadership and service. So don't go anywhere. Just take a breather, and we'll be right back to join you. Well, that felt like a really fast whirlwind for me. I mean, I know it was about 13 or 14 minutes, but it seemed like really fast. We kind of, you know, took over a lot of ground right there. But let's talk now about this idea of leadership. And you alluded to it a little bit. So in your talk this morning, you gave four descriptions or 4 points about a Good Samaritan. You said that a Good Samaritan was willing to get involved. A Good Samaritan ignores racism. A Good Samaritan has a good name. And a Good Samaritan was generous. So if we're not operating as Good Samaritans, then how do we get to this place? Now, I understand what you're saying. There are 4 points here, but there has to be a relationship too, right? There has to be a relationship with God that kind of all of this kind of breathes out of this whole, you know, these action points now flow out of our relationship with God. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right, right. You know, people will know, as I say, we know if we have a relationship with one another. People, mm-hmm. by the same token, will know if we have a genuine and authentic relationship with the Lord, with God. And so I think, therefore, before we get to these action steps, as you know, have stated, I've got to love God. And that has to be clear. That has to be seen. That has to be shown. That has to be even felt, if you will. And so I think one has to really, really dig deep in their devotional life. You know, how do you get to know a person? You spend time with them. So the same thing is true with God. How do I get to know him? I spend time with him. That's in worship. That's in prayer. That's in meditation. That's in reading. That's even in walking in nature. I get to go know God because I want to resemble who God is and what God is about. And so then with that, the action steps, because when you surrender your life to the Lord, you understand you are not your own. Mm-hmm. You are his. And mm-hmm. when you surrender to the Lord, then those action steps become a bit more natural. You know, they're not as foreign, if you will, but they're a bit more natural. Let me get involved. Why Christ did. I'm trying to be like him. Let me ignore racism. Why Christ did. I'm trying to be like him. Let me, I'm generous. I have a good name. Why Christ did. Let me, you know, if you will, let me follow him.
So it's more than just what we do in the public arena. It's really fueled by what we do in the private world.
That's right. It definitely. Because what happens in the private will manifest itself in the public.
Either way.
I said it earlier today. A challenge we have is we have a lot of people who are private sinners but public saints. But Christ is calling us to be public and private saints. And I think that's important.
So let's move to maybe a prophetic approach, I think, or something like that. I want you to tell us, what do you think is the biggest issue or problem affecting young people today? Fair enough question?
That's a fair question.
And the intentional pause is okay.
Yeah. Because there's so many things. I could say racism. I could say acceptance. Mm. Young people want to be accepted today. They're different. Millennials, you know, they are very independent in their thinking, very independent in their behaviors, and they just want to genuinely be accepted. So that is very strong, and racism probably is a close second. But, you know, racism is taught. You know, racism taught. We can take our little kids and we can put them in a room, and if they've never been exposed or taught that, they get along, they're fine. So I think we can, with younger people, it's not as strong perhaps, maybe with generations who've preceded us, but it still exists. But I think acceptance, I am who I am. Can I accept it? Can you love me for who I am?
And I love your story that you said earlier today. Recount that story for people who may not get a chance to listen to your chapel talk with the two little girls.
We were talking about little girls. There were two little girls at the height of the segregation era in which schools were being integrated. And a little white girl's getting ready for school, and her mother's getting her ready for school. She's going to the first grade. She's excited, and she's looking forward to it. And so she goes off to school, and she comes home from school, and her mother's very, very anxious. Honey, how did things go today? Was everything all right? And she said, yes, I sat next to a little black girl in school. And then so the mother is fearful. Well, how did that go? What happened? She said, oh, we were both scared. We held each other's hands all day long. And that was cute. And that's, but how simplistic, but how true.
And I like that story. And here's the reason I like that story, because your challenge to us today to be Good Samaritans involves jumping into the ditch to That's help right. someone else, you know. And in that particular case, you know, both of those little girls obviously were scared. They were fearful, but they joined together.
Right.
What do we need to know about guidelines or ways in which we should become Good Samaritans who are willing to jump in the ditch to help other people? What do we need to know about that?
First of all, we have to all understand we all have a ditch. My ditch may be different than your ditch, and your ditch may be different than my ditch, but we all have a ditch. We all are somewhere on the side of the road. We are all physically, emotionally, economically, socially half dead, if you will. So we all are in our ditch, and so we've got to understand that. Then when we talk about being a good Samaritan, get involved. Okay, so I'm not going to just walk by and say, okay, that person's in a ditch. But I think God has called me as a Christian, as a follower of Christ, to get involved and help my brother, help my sister out of that ditch. We all have a ditch, and we're called to help one another out, and it's mutual. Okay, you know, the story, the parable ended with a good Samaritan taking care of the injured right. individual. But I'm sure if the legend were to go on with the story, there might have come a time later in the future that the injured man, he was able to help the good Samaritan who could have been in a ditch. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's reciprocal, if you will. And we reap what we sow. So if we're willing to help one get out of a ditch, there may come a time later in our life that we're going to need the same for either from that person or someone else. And so therefore, I think that number one, we all have to understand we're all in a ditch. Your ditch is different than sure. my ditch. And our timing in our ditches are different. But we've got to help pull each other out.
I like how you said that. Back up a minute. You said that our timing in our ditches are different. What do you mean by that?
By that, I mean your ditch and what may transpire in your life, that timing may be different. Then the time, I may be on top of the world. I may be walking sure. on level ground, but you're in a ditch. But there may come a time later in the future that I'm in a ditch. That's one way the timing. But then also, my timing in a ditch may be a day. Your timing in a ditch may be a year. Okay? And it doesn't have to feel long, be long to feel long. But we all have a ditch. So the timing may be different in that it occurs at different times or intervals in our life, in our life's journey. Our roads are different. And so we're in ditches at different times in that way. But we're also in ditches in different times in that mine may be a day, maybe a week. Yours might be a year. It may be 10 years.
So how do we support people who are who jump in ditches to help other folks? And let me frame this question this way, Carlton, because it's easy to say I want to help somebody, right? You know, if I want to help you, right? And in particular, we might say, hey, I'm praying for you. But for me to actually get in the ditch with you is more than just verbal action. It means that I'm getting into the mess with you to help you. So I obviously need to be stronger than the opposition in the ditch if I'm going to come in and help you. What do we need to know about how to support people who find themselves in the trenches really walking alongside hurting people to help them?
There are two words that come to mind, sympathy and empathy.
Okay.
Of course, and we know they're different. Sympathy is, I haven't been through this, but I care about you and care what you're going through. Empathy says, look, I've been there. I've been through this. And so with that, I think I'm equipped perhaps a little better because I've gone through this to get in that ditch with you. So one, I'm getting the ditch because I sympathize. The other reason I get in the ditch because I empathize. I think in my own personal experience, I haven't shared this with you. I'll share it now. My wife and I had been recently married a little over almost 2 years. And we had just given birth to a little one. We were married in 97, and we gave birth to a little girl in 99. I was on my way, my wife and I and our firstborn daughter, we were on our way to preach at a church we had formerly pastored. Mm. And on our way there to that church, we got in a terrible car accident. Mm. My daughter was killed.
Oh, man.
Okay, so when you introduced me, you said I had 3 daughters. I actually had 4. Oh. That daughter was killed in the accident. And one day, when if I'm able to come back to Lee, I'll share that story. But my daughter was killed. And so now, when people are in the ditch of depression, ditch of losing a loved one, ditch of losing a child, every story is different. There are nuances that are different to every story. But in terms of one losing a special someone in their life, I've been in that ditch. And so sometimes I'm able to tell someone who's in the ditch of despair, look, your situation is different than mine, but I'll tell you this. I have been in a ditch of despair. Mm. I have been in a ditch of, really, is all this the God thing, Jesus thing, is this true? I've been in that ditch. And if the Lord can bring me out of the ditch, he can surely bring you out. And so sometimes I use my own experience, and I'm able to empathize and share with others, look, I've been in that ditch. You can come out of that ditch as well. And I'll share my own experience of what helped me come out of that ditch. And in so doing, that helps the other person get out.
Is it true that, I mean, first off, what a story. Thank you for sharing that. But is it true that God has a tendency to take your pain and turn that around for your pulpit?
Yes, definitely. Pain, he'll take the pain for power. We say it all the time, the alliteration. My valor becomes victory.
Yeah.
You know, my pain becomes power. Yes, he does it. I think of 1 Corinthians 10:13, one of my favorite texts. In fact, it was that text that brought me through the experience of losing my daughter. There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation make a way of escape that ye may be able to bear it. Mm. And so with every trial, with every temptation, with every ditch, God has provided a way of escape. We got to choose the route he selects for us. And sometimes that's not easy. Sometimes that route means you got mud on your face.
Right.
You have egg on your face. You know what I'm saying? You know, the man that Jesus healed at the pool of Bethesda.
Yeah.
You know, look, he had to spit on the ground, rub the dirt together, put mud on his eyes. But mud and all, I'm in. I just want to be able to see. So sometimes in order to get out of the ditch, you don't come out comfortable or classy. You don't come out refined. But I just thank God, Lord, you got me out of the ditch. And I think that's very, very important. So I've been able to share that with people.
So that little girl would have been 18 years old this year.
She would have been 19.
19 years old this year. Now she never, she's not gone from you in your mind.
Oh,
she's there every day.
Right.
Then how did you turn that, or how did God help you turn that from, you know, yeah, so Carlton's been in a ditch of despair, you know, Carlton lost a daughter. I get it. But how did you move it from staying in a ditch of despair and desolation, from staying there to allowing God to utilize it? What are some practical steps for people who might be listening to us right now,
right,
who have suffered some tremendous loss? How can they take that loss even 19 years later and move it from a constant reminder of just, this is killing me, to, God, you are sovereign. You will use this. You will get the glory from it.
Right. Well,
fair question.
Fair question. As you shared earlier in your question, her memory is with me. I mean, not a day goes by that I don't think about her. How? That's not easy. But I made a determination in my life, my wife and I, either we're going to become bitter or better. Mm. And we made the choice to become better. For whatever reason, the Lord spared our lives for either one of two reasons. Either one, he spared our lives because we weren't ready. Mm. Or two, he spared our lives because he still yet had a work for us to do. So my response to that is not A, B, but C, all of the above. I still think he had a work for us to do. I don't think we were ready at that point for death. And so with that, we made the choice to become better. And through our ministry, we have sought to reach people, talk to people. So I think you have to come. Satan, all he wants to do is steal, kill, and destroy. So I think for people who go through that pit of despair, you know, you want to stay and wallow in that pit, you know, because after you bleed a while, then you got to get up. You got to do a greater work, because that's Satan's job. He wants to kill you. He wants to destroy you. But after you go there, you have to make a determination. I want to become better. Mm. I have bled, but I got to become better. Mm. And I've got to do a greater work for the Lord. And as believers, that's what we're called upon to do.
So in the last few minutes of this particular segment on leadership, what are your suggestions to young leaders, young aspiring you know, preachers, young aspiring business leaders that really want to make an impact on the kingdom, knowing some of the difficulty that you've been through, some of the challenges, and some of the victories? What is your what's your 2-minute message to young leaders on how they can really be leaders for God's kingdom?
Number one, you got to understand your purpose. You know, and your purpose and my purpose are two different things. You have to understand your purpose. What has God called me to do? So you got to understand your purpose. The next thing I would do, preparation. All right. So if God is calling you to be a leader, you got to be prepared. A part of that preparation is pain. Mm. You know, those, you know, you have to go through the fire to come out as pure gold. So a part of that preparation is education, and education not just academically in the classroom, but education in the hard school of life. Just knocks. I am a better person. I'm almost 46 years old. I'm a better
person.
I'm a better person now than I was when I was 26.
Yeah.
Simply not because, I mean, I was educated, had 2 master's degrees by the time I was 26. But I've lived life, and there's a lot of living the life. Mm. And so with that, knowing your purpose, then becoming prepared academically and in life, then after you become prepared, you know, preparation, we proceed that with purpose. Then my third thing is the last P. Proclaim. You know, you got to tell people, now this is what God has done for me, this is what preparation has done for me, and so I'm able as a leader now to proclaim and share that with others. So with that, know your purpose, make sure you're prepared, and then be prepared now to proclaim what God has given you.
And with that, we're going to take a brief break, so don't go anywhere. We'll come back and finish up this interview with Dr. Carlton Bird regarding the idea of service and a final challenge from my friend to you. Hey, and we're back, and if you haven't tuned in yet, you know, you missed it, and if you're still with us, you'll be glad you are. My friend Carlton Bird is here, and we're going to talk about this last part of this episode, and we're going to talk about service. Now, we've been talking about faith, we've been talking about leadership, right?
Yes.
Okay, so in the faith perspective, you know, you really unpack for us, what is the scriptural, what does the scripture say to our response to caring for other people? And then in the leadership segment, you gave some real genuine points on authenticity, but then you got really personal and talked about your own testimony, you and your wife and your own story. In this last few minutes, I want to kind of get you to be a lot more practical with us, because okay, knowing you and what I kind of observe and seeing and hearing you and spending time with you, I know you're very, very committed to theology and very committed to, you know, sharing the word of God in authentic biblical interpretation. But I also think you're very practical, and you understand that this theory and this theology that we talk about has got to go to the street, and has got to make it to the street. So how does someone approach that with a desire to maybe serve? And some people that maybe think, you know what, man, I want to start a ministry. I want to do something that God's got boiling inside of me, and I want to get this out here and make it work. I'm going to give you kind of a free rein for a few minutes without any lead-in questions and unpack that for us. How do people get started in it, and, you know, how do they actually make this practical approach to serving other people?
Right. Well, people, in terms of ministry, you got to be called by God. And you say, well, what does that mean? What does that mean? You know. You know. Mm-hmm. When you're in living in harmony with God,
you can't get away from
it. You can't get away from it. You know. You will not rest. You will not be happy. You'll be restless, because you know when God's calling is on your life. So with that, you're answering that call, and then you're saying, how can I now put this call into action? How can I now, you know, make the living word become the practical word in my life and what I do every day? I think it's important for people to understand that to engage in ministry and to engage your community and actively get involved, you got to work. Hmm. I mean, that sounds easy, but we're being practical in this segment. You got to work. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, even with all the pastoral staff members that work, you know, with me, we have a team. I am the lead or senior pastor, and I have 5 associates under me. That work with me, I should say. But I tell them, you got to work. So I'm the first at the office every morning, you know. I drop my girls off every morning for school. So at 7:45, I'm in the office after I've dropped my girls off, because that's my time with them. And I'm in the office answering calls, answering emails, planning, praying, preparing, being intentional about what we're going to do. Because in ministry, if you're not careful, you can get caught up so much in the weeds of just ministry, or caught up in the daily operational matters, that you look up and say, well, what have I done? What has happened this day? What has happened this week? What has happened this year? And so I think it's very important, if we're going to engage in service and be very active in the community, that has to be deliberate. So I'll say, okay, in 2018, for this year, this is what I want to accomplish. This is what we need to accomplish in ministry, particularly for our community. Okay, so you got to work. You got to be intentional or deliberate about planning that work, and then you got to make it happen. So at the end of the 6 months, I'll evaluate myself. Okay, what have we done to be able to accomplish this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't, we talked of earlier, where the Lord has blessed us to build a new family life center. That just didn't happen. That just didn't say, well, I said, we're going to build this building. No, when I arrived in Huntsville, I felt the Lord's call on my life that as a part of my pastoral tenure and ministry at this church, that that needed to happen. So that was the end result. But the process leading to that, I needed to effect that along the journey, along the way. So I would dare to tell people, number one, you know, you got to work. You got to know. And then you got to be deliberate in what you're doing and plan for something. And then you got to work to make that happen.
You talked about, you know, caring for our neighbors, which is really the call today that I think God has put on all of us. So where in the American culture do you find that we have the struggle the most to serve our neighbors?
Okay, I think that we are in a very, very high pace microwave generation. We hear that all the time. We're also in a very, and praise God for it, a highly technological age.
Sure.
Now, that's a good thing, but the reality is that touch, that relationship building piece, it can get lost very quickly. You know, we text each other now, we email each other, we Snapchat one another, we Instagram one another, we tweet one another. And so the human element, the component of relational growth and development, it can get very, very lost. So with that, in our world today, it's harder, if you will, to actively engage, because with our highly technological society, you can do that in cyberspace, you know what I'm saying? But I think we have to say, okay, let's put down this gadget, let's put down this tool, let's put down this instrument, and let's actually engage with people. And I think that's important. But that is tough in our society. I'm not going to even stand here and deny it. Or sit here and deny it. It is tough because we live in a highly fast-paced, highly technological age.
So what are some areas that we really need to be? So I think God speaks to you.
Okay.
No doubt, right? So what are some areas that you think God is speaking to us that we need to be really intentional to serve unbelievers in? And I think we need to serve unbelievers. I mean, you're doing a barbershop, and it's probably not for all of the people,
correct,
people in the company that are redeemed, right?
Correct.
So what are some areas that we need to be spiritually aware of that maybe, you know, we need to put our spiritual antennas out here and recognize these are some areas in the world that we need to be real intentional to share God's love and serve in these particular areas?
First thing, he who seeks to transform humanity must first understand humanity. So we're in this world, but not of this world. So therefore, if we're going to be a change agent in the world, a change agent in our community, we need to understand how our community thinks. I learned this very early on in my marriage. My wife, I tell her I love her. Well, if I love her, I need to love her the way she wants to be loved. You know, I can't go on her birthday to my favorite restaurant. I need to go.
Unless you convince her that it's her idea,
right?
If you convince her it's her idea, you can.
Right. So if I'm going to love my wife, I need to go to the restaurant she loves on her birthday.
Yeah.
So the same way with the community. Yeah. If I'm going to love the community, then I need to love them in the way they want to be loved. Because how I want to love them may not be how they want to be loved or what they need.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's very important. Understanding our communities. Understanding, you know, we talked about this earlier, the fast-paced, highly technological world. Understanding the millennial mind is very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
And meeting the needs based on the different demographic groups that we're ministering to. But you gotta be intentional about that. You can't just assume. And I think too often we just assume, well, this person, this is what they want. Well, they may not want that.
Mm-hmm.
They may not even need that. So I think it's very important to understand. You gotta transform humanity, understand how humanity thinks.
Being a zealot's a very dangerous place to be.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of people have passion without really knowledge and understanding.
Without knowledge.
What are some cautions that you can give us today on with regard to service, you know, because there are some areas that one student asked me the question earlier with regard to with response to your talk in chapel, you know, are there any ditches that we don't need to be jumping into?
Good question.
Are there any areas that we don't need to be involved in? You know, Jesus walked with the people, but he was not of the world.
Right.
The scripture tells us that the world will know us when we have love for one another, you know, but yet we're not of the world either. We're not supposed to be of this world participating in the world activities. We're supposed to be salt and light, basically.
That's right.
So what are some cautions that you can give people who really want to go into the gutter and help other people? They want to serve well, but they need to be cautious so that they themselves don't get pulled into that ditch
first
in a negative
way. Yeah, good question. Excellent question. First of all, I would say that every ditch is not expedient. Sometimes when people are in a ditch, they may need to stay there a little bit.
Yeah.
There can be some recovery in the ditch. There can be some renovation or rehabilitation in the ditch. Every ditch is not expedient for us to jump in. I remember pastoring in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and there was a member of mine who was incarcerated at the time, and I was trying to get him out, Yeah. And never will forget an older elder, a statesman in the church said, listen, he may need to stay there for a while. Mm. You know, sometimes when you hit rock bottom and all you can do is lie on your back, you can look up to the hills from whence cometh your help. Mm. So I would dare to say avoiding ditches, first of all, understand it's not expedient all the time to get everybody out of the ditch when they want to be out. Number two, I would dare to say this, and I'm going to link this. I preach a sermon hanging around the tree. Maybe I'd do that at Lee University one
Come
day.
On, man.
But
I think you'll be coming back at some point.
I hope so. But I tell people all the time, Adam and Eve got in trouble in the garden because they were hanging around the tree. God told them, don't eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Don't touch it. Don't go near it. But they got in trouble because they were hanging around him. Because they were hanging around the tree, they got hooked on the tree, if you will. I think that all of us have trees in our lives. We need to avoid hanging around. We need to, you know, avoid being around. We don't need to hang around them. So I would dare to say, if someone has a ditch or a tree that is problematic for them personally, perhaps they need not hang around that ditch. Maybe that ditch is for somebody else to help somebody else get up out of and not them, lest they slip back in the very ditch they're trying to help someone get out of. So therefore, some of us have some trees we need to avoid. We have some trees, and some of these trees can be people. Some of these trees can be places. Some of these trees can be things. But if they're problematic for us, then stay out of that tree. Get out of that ditch. Don't go near that ditch. Allow somebody else and their giftedness to go and help that person get out of the ditch. So if I can think of two just off the top of my head.
Sure.
Number one, every ditch for everyone to get out of, it's not expedient. And number two, know what's a problematic ditch for you. Because if a problem for you, it might just be best that it may be somebody else that needs to help that individual get out of that ditch.
I really appreciate you saying that, because I think a lot of times people are pulled back into situations because either they were not strong enough to not get into that ditch again, or either, you know, they just were pulled back into that and it blindsided them. And I think, and I really appreciate you saying that, Carlton, because, but that only comes out of the relationship with God, right? That we get this whole relationship with God working where God says, hey, you know, you don't need to go there. It's like, you know, you run enough stop signs, eventually you're going to run a red light. You run a red light, you're going to be in a crash, right?
Right.
All right, Carlton, we got just a couple of minutes left on the episode today. What's your challenge? What do you want to challenge people that might be listening? Now, this is open game for you here.
Okay.
What's on your heart? You know, what is on your heart today? What is the area that God is dealing with you the most as it relates to our world and areas in which you can speak life into? Now, you're a television host called
Breath of Life.
Breath of Life, you know. So do a little Breath of Life for us for a minute and share life with people and help them understand. Maybe this is what God might be speaking through you to somebody who's listening.
Number one, I would dare to say, if we are the church, if we're the body of Christ, if we're the believers, we got to get off our donkeys.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I was preaching today. We got to do something. We can't just watch certain things happen. We got to make things happen. And I think as a church, as a body of believers, we've got to get off our donkeys, just like the Good Samaritan did, and we've got to make a difference. And we can't just talk about it anymore. The world, we talk. The bureaucratic bottleneck is done. Do something, and everybody can do something. We may not be able to sing like David. We may be able not to preach like Peter or pray like Paul, but all of us can do something to build the kingdom of God. Come out of your comfort zone. God doesn't call the equipped. He equips the called. Mm. And I think we all need to understand that our brothers, our sisters, they are our neighbors. God is calling us to love one another. God is calling us to get off our donkeys and do something so that he can come. God has not come back yet because we as a body of believers haven't done our job. Mm. You know, so if the enemies of God are rising up, the people of God need to rise up. And I want to encourage our listeners today, you can do it. You can do it. God is calling you. You can do something, whether it's a meal, whether it's a sermon, whether it's a song, whether it's the gift of hospitality and just being friendly. But all of us can do something, because I don't know about you, but I'm looking forward to hearing him say, well done. I am grateful for the affirmation I receive from people, but I'm looking forward when Jesus comes to hearing him say, Carlton Bird, well done.
Well done. Carlton Bird, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, wants to get in touch with you with regard to the ministry, how do they reach you guys? You got an email, you got some way, a website or something where they can connect with you guys?
Definitely. Our church website is www.oucsda.org. That's the Oakwood University Church. www.oucsda.org. And then our website for our Breath of Life ministry, which we're on four national stations, by
awesome.
The way. Four national stations. But anyway, website, www.breathoflife.tv. Again, www.breathoflife.tv. Or you can call us at Breath of Life. The number is 256-929-6460. Once again, that number is 256-929-6460.
Carlton, thank you for joining us
today. It's been my privilege.
Delighted that you
pleasure.
Are here.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Now, we're going to do something that we're starting on our episodes now. This is the first time that we've begun doing this. But since we know that you love the Lee you worship so well, we're asking our listeners not to leave as soon as you hear Carlton's voice and my voice go away, because we're going to actually pull into our show, starting with this particular episode, we're going to be sharing some of our Lee U worship tunes. And
all right.
So there's going to be a song that Grayson's going to pick out that's going to come behind our interview today, just to kind of give people another moment to reflect on God's goodness and God's grace in their own life as they begin to reach out to others. As I say often on Servcast, you are made for more. So get out and do what God's calling you to do. And have a great day. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you.
I know you're calling me when I can't hear it. I know you're reaching down when I can't feel you near. My soul is longing for something greater still. So tell me why. But even so, I'll sing. Even when my eyes can't see, I wanna be your hands, I wanna be your feet, the change you.
We're giving it all for you. We're giving it all. yesterday. We're giving it all to you. We're giving it all to you. By faith we go, by faith we move. I wanna be the one you use. We're giving it all for you. We're giving it all for you. Don't wanna sit, don't wanna wait. Don't wanna waste another day. We're giving it all to you. We're giving it all to you. We're giving it all to you. We're giving it all. I wanna be your feet, the change you wanna see. Oh Lord, let it start with me. I wanna be your hands, I wanna be your feet, the change you wanna see. Oh Lord, let it start with me. I wanna be your hands, I wanna be.
Thank you guys so much for joining us on Servcast. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes and share us on Facebook. Hey, if you've got any questions, send them to servcast22@gmail.com. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Servcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Servcast. The thoughts and opinions expressed on Servcast are those of William Lamb, his guest, and no one else. Until next time, this is Servcast, signing off from Studio 22.